Welcome to the official Barclays Premier League podcast, brought to you by Barclays.
Hello, I'm Jackie Oatley, and welcome to you wherever you are in the world. Is there anyone who can predict this season's title race?
We knew we couldn't afford to lose today. We couldn't let Arsenal get 11 points ahead of us today, and we knew a victory would put us right back in there, and we're in a great position.
Mourinho's now 66 not out at the Bridge, but that wasn't even half the story.
We knew that Chelsea would come at us from early on, but the way we formed second half was unbelievable. We're really disappointed that we didn't come away with all 3 points.
And is this Dutchman the top flight's new free kick specialist?
You need to practice, just need to go out there and perform and just do the thing you learn to do.
We'll be speaking exclusively to Aston Villa's Leandro Bacuna and Stephen Reid of West Brom. Former Toon star John Beresford explains Newcastle's recent resurgence. Plus, we hear from Tim Krul, Chris Hughton and Morgan Schneiderlin. Hello and welcome to the official Barclays Premier League podcast. I'm Jackie Oatley, and joining me to discuss all the issues from another dramatic weekend of top flight action is a former Arsenal and West Ham midfielder, Stuart Robson. Hi, Stuart.
Hello.
You can easily predict this Barclays Premier League season, can't you?
You'd like to be able to predict the Barclays Premier League season so far, but at the moment we can't. I mean, Spurs going down to Newcastle, you wouldn't have predicted that one. Manchester City losing at Sunderland, again, you wouldn't predict that one. And once Chelsea went 1-0 up against West Brom, you'd expect them to win the game. So it's been a very, very difficult one to predict so far.
Indeed. Well, coming up, we'll be speaking to the West Brom defender Stephen Reid about that 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge. But we'll begin at Old Trafford, where champions Manchester United took a crucial 3 points off the leaders Arsenal, with former Gunner Robin van Persie doing all the damage with the only goal of a tightly fought encounter. Well, Stuart, what was your assessment of the match overall?
Well, I thought Arsenal actually played very well in the second half. They controlled the game in the second half. But as Manchester United often do at Old Trafford, they pressed Arsenal high up the field. They made it difficult for Arsenal to get their passing game going. There wasn't enough fluency in Arsenal's attack. But in the second half, they were much better. They started to get crosses into the box. But I can never quite understand why, when you've got somebody like Aaron Ramsey playing brilliantly at the moment, why you'd want to go and play him out on the right-hand side. And I think that just lost some of the creativity in Arsenal.
Well, let's hear what the two managers made of it all. Arsenal's Arsene Wenger, but first of all, United boss David Moyes.
This was a big result for us today. Arsenal have been in terrific form this season, and we had to play well ourselves today to get the result. I think there's a lot of ups and downs. I think it's a close-run league this year. There'll be a few shocks, and I think we've had one or two ourselves in the early part of the season. I'm pleased that we're beginning to show a little bit more consistency, a wee bit of momentum, and let's hope that we continue that.
I felt in the first half we were too nervous and did rush our game too much and lost too many balls. Second half, when we played composed and real go and played our usual game, I felt very, 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 very close many times to score. But it didn't happen. We have to digest that and come back after the break in a strong way.
Arsene Wenger there said they were nervous in the first half. That seems a little odd, bearing in mind they're top of the league and doing so well.
Just beaten Dortmund away. They've played brilliantly over the first part of the season, playing with great confidence. To be nervous at Manchester United seems a strange sort of thing to say.
Well, the last team to stop Arsenal from scoring in a league match was David Moyes' Everton on 16th of April. That's 16 games ago. Something about Mr. Moyes, perhaps. Well, it was a huge win for United, up now to fifth in the table and just 5 points behind Arsenal. If they'd lost, it would have been 11 points. So that's a huge mental boost for the United players.
Well, it was a must-win game for Manchester United. Had they not won that, I think they'd be at the title race. I really do. But some of their better players came to the fore. You know, Robin van Persie scores the goal, but Wayne Rooney was absolutely outstanding. I thought Jones in midfield really worked hard in the first half before having to go back into a centre-half position. But Manchester United worked hard all around the pitch to defend much better than they have done in the earlier part of the season.
Well, van Persie scored in the last 5 Barclays Premier League encounters between the two sides. There was none of that business where you see a former player not celebrating against his former club, was there?
Well, I think Arsene Wenger said beforehand he's still 75% an Arsenal player. I don't think that's absolutely right. I think now Robin van Persie, for the stick he's got off the Arsenal fans, has no love for Arsenal. He's purely a Manchester United player, and you show how much he wanted to score that goal.
Well, the provider of van Persie's goal was his strike partner Wayne Rooney, who was well aware of the importance of Sunday's encounter.
We knew we had to win today at all cost. I think it's the toughest we've been to play against, I think, to break down, and we defended really well, and thankfully Robin got the goal for us and we got the 3 points. But I think it was a great
effort by everyone. We worked on free kicks and corners because, as you know, Arsenal have got a lot of smaller players in the team, so we thought that could be an opportunity where we can get a goal, and thankfully it's paid off.
Great effort by everyone, he says, but he's not going to say himself, but he was absolutely phenomenal. Why do you think he's in such good form and at the peak of his fitness now rather than last season?
Well, I think he's got the belief of the manager. David Moyes had him at Everton, and obviously they had their argument at one point, but I think that David Moyes has given Wayne Rooney his head. He wants him to go and play in the second striker position. He's encouraged him to go and press the ball all around the field, and now you're seeing the Wayne Rooney maybe of 2 years ago, when he is the link for everything good that Manchester United do. He closes the ball down, he sees passes, and he will run beyond Robin Van Persie at times.
To prove that point, since the beginning of last season, Wayne Rooney's had more assists, 14, in the Barclays Premier League than any other player. Well, there were a couple of incidents in the game, a couple of head injuries to Szczesny and Vidic. What did you make of those incidents?
Well, I'm going to be a little bit unfair probably on Szczesny, because he went down, he looked as though he'd been poleaxed, and a couple of minutes later he gets up and there's nothing wrong with him. The Vidic one was a terrible one. When you see it in slow motion, his head's not right back. He obviously ended up in hospital, so maybe won't play for a couple of weeks.
Well, Arsenal were without Mertesacker and Zitsky, two players who've been key for them this season. They were out with a bug, and it came at the end of a very hard week, bearing in mind that big win in Dortmund. I mean, how much do you think those two factors played in that defeat?
Well, I'm not so sure about Rositsky, whether he would have done anything better than, say, Cazorla or Ramsey did, or the two midfield holding midfield players. But I think Mertesacker got a lot of stick over the last couple of years, but he's now formed a really good partnership with Koscielny, and they drop deeper at times, they squeeze up at the right time. So I think that partnership being broken caused Arsenal one or two problems.
And the fact that they lost that game going into the international break makes the Barclays Premier League table fascinating now.
It certainly does. You know, if Arsenal had won that game, they would be, in my view, favourites to win the Barclays Premier League. But having lost it, I think there's four or five teams that can still go on and win it.
Well, now just a point and a place above Manchester United, a Chelsea who left it very, very late to snatch a 2-2 draw at home to an impressive West Brom side. Eden Hazard kept his cool to stroke home a 95th minute penalty to preserve Jose Mourinho's unbeaten league record at Stamford Bridge. The manager was asked afterwards if he was worried this run might come to an end.
I didn't think about it, really. If you ask me if I'm happy because I didn't lose, no, I'm not happy. Because I want to win the game, so for me it's not a big deal. One day I have to lose at home, and the day I lose will be a really big day for me, because it's a day to remember how many matches I was unbeaten, so no big deal.
What did you make of that whole incident with the penalty and the fact that he was seconds away from losing that record?
Well, first of all, I don't think it was a penalty. I have to say, I don't think it was a dive either, but I don't think it was a penalty. I think he'd be more upset with the fact that Chelsea didn't play particularly well. They started the game playing at a slow tempo. They didn't create enough chances in the first half, despite dominating possession. And then when West Brom came out in the second half and pressed them higher up the field and started to counter-attack them really well, they had no answer to it, and they were lucky to get back into the game. So Chelsea aren't playing at their best at the moment.
I was there, and I spoke to Mourinho afterwards. I think we're all a little bit surprised by his reaction, that he was so adamant that that was a penalty. Well, talking of which, one of West Brom's star performers on Saturday was defender Stephen Reid. I'm delighted to say that he joins us on the line now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Jackie.
Now, Stephen, when I last saw you, which was directly after the game, and you watched back that penalty decision, you were measured, impressively, but devastated. You've had a couple of days to reflect now. What would you say about it now?
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult, obviously, so soon after the game to go in and do the piece. It's still full of emotion and just coming off the field, and obviously having watched the incident like I've done over the weekend, really disappointing. And it still feels like a bit of a defeat. The lads are so deflated after the game that we were almost robbed of that win. So yeah, very disappointed.
Can you give us an idea of what the bus was like and the atmosphere on it on the way back to the Midlands?
There's a few of the lads that stayed down. There's a few of the lads that have gone away straight away on international duty. So it's going to be one of those strange weeks this week where most of the lads are away. And really, we could have done with a game next weekend to get that out of our system.
Stephen, what was the game plan in the second half? Because you completely changed it, didn't you? Because the first half you sort of sat deep, and the second half you attacked them more, you pressed the higher up the field. Was that the game plan at half-time?
What we wanted to do, first and foremost, was to stay in the game for as long as possible. We knew that Chelsea would come at us from early on. They had a disappointing result against Newcastle. The way we formed second half was unbelievable, because we was a little bit deflated. We conceded at a bad time just before half-time, but it seemed to have the opposite effect. It seemed to galvanise us and seemed to give us a little bit more confidence. And every time we went forward in the second half, we looked dangerous. We caused some problems. We could have had maybe one or two more goals, especially maybe the one when Chris Brunt has gone through. We just sensed a little bit of nervousness, maybe with the crowd at Chelsea, and we're really disappointed that we didn't come away with all 3 points.
Taking that disappointment, Stephen, can you try and turn that into a positive in your next game against Aston Villa? Will you sort of use that to galvanise yourselves, knowing that You were almost, or maybe were, good enough to win at Chelsea.
Yeah, I think so. I think the only really poor performance we've given this season is away to Liverpool. Usually when we do come up against the bigger teams, if you like, in the Premier League, we perform well. We did that at Man United away. We've beaten Arsenal at the Emirates in recent seasons as well, and Chelsea a couple of times. So we can compete against the top sides, but it's important now when we come up against Villa in a couple of weeks' time that we build on that second half performance that we gave at Stamford Bridge and hopefully get a win in what's a big local derby for the club.
There was a lot of talk in the build-up to the Chelsea game about Steve Clarke and his Chelsea background and how close he was to Mourinho. Did you get a sense that it was a really big game for him in particular?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think you can go into that game without thinking of the manager and his connection with the club and his connection with Jose Mourinho as well, the part he played and all the silverware that they won in his first year at the club. So yeah, a little bit disappointed for him that we didn't get the result as well. With a few minutes to go, you're going through your mind what a result that would have been, and to break that unbelievable home record that Mourinho's got in the Premier League with Chelsea would have been an unbelievable achievement.
What's it like working with Steve Clarke? I know he's got Kevin Keane who's a coach. Who does most of the coaching there and who's the sort of man manager?
Gaffer, it's Steve Clarke, and we've got Keith Downing as well as first team coach. So Keith and Kevin do their little bits and pieces in preparation for the major part of the session, which the gaffer usually takes when we're getting down to the tactical side of it and how we're going to play and how we're going to come up against the opposition at the weekend. The gaffer steps in and we work from early in the week, doing a little bit every single session on how we're going to come up against the opposition. Usually the ones that are not likely to be involved will play as the opposition, if you like, and you work all week to that effect. And it worked really well at the weekend. We've looked really impressive, except maybe for that game against Liverpool.
A word about you personally. You're 32 years of age now. You seem to be enjoying yourself at West Brom, apart from at the weekend. But is there anyone in football who you'd say particularly influenced you from an early age?
I sort of go back to my days at Millwall, really, Jackie. The senior pros there sort of instilled in me the qualities I think that you need to make it in the modern game. I think that over the years has changed with the way the younger players are coming through. I just had great senior pros around me when I was at Millwall, the likes of Sean Dyche and Bobby Bowery and Scott Fitzgerald, Stuart Nevercutt. Great senior pros that just put you in your place when you needed it. And we had a good young team, and if any one of us became anyway big time or whatever in how well we was doing, that soon cut you down to size. So I think those sort of players helped me greatly when I was coming through, the likes of Tim Cahill, Paul Heifel, the ones that were coming through. It was just a great time, and I think that really helped me to develop and stay in the game as long as I have.
And just finally, Stephen, looking towards the rest of the season, we know you had a very tough start to the season at West Brom and you had a difficult time at the weekend, but so nearly came away with a fantastic result. What are you expecting now?
I think we want to build on last season. Last season, we started the season really well up until halfway through. The second half of the year, we form dipped and we didn't have the best of times. I think if we can just show more consistency throughout the whole of the season, then I think we're going to be looking at getting into that top half again, and I think that'll be another successful season for the club.
Stephen Reid, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Jackie.
Well, Stuart, as for Chelsea, they've now dropped 5 points from their last two games. It's not exactly title-winning form, but do you still see them ultimately as being right up there at the end of the season?
They'll certainly be in the top two or three. I think they've got a manager that knows how to win games. They play a very much away from home. They play a counter-attacking game. They should be solid defensively. They work so hard on the defensive pattern of the team. The two midfield players in front of the back four work really hard as well. It's whether they've got enough in the centre-forward area. I know Eto's scored goals. I know that Torres has played much better this season, but they still need the centre-forward to have great games at times for them to go and win the title. The wide players aren't doing quite as well as I thought they might do at the start of the season. So there's problems for Chelsea, and I think Mourinho's still struggling to get the balance right between the defensive side of the game and the attacking side of the game.
Well, coming up, we'll be speaking exclusively to Aston Villa defender Leandro Bacuna after another free kick special against Cardiff at the weekend.
You're listening to the official Barclays Premier League podcast with Jackie Oatley.
A place above Chelsea in third spot is Southampton, who saw off Hull City 4-1 at St Mary's on Saturday to make it their best ever start to a top-flight season after 11 games. Well, Maurizio Pochettino, most of us have to admit, we said who when he came in after Nigel Adkins was sacked, but everybody's singing his praises now. What do you think he's doing so right?
He's got the game plan right. He's got the best out of the players. I've seen them two or three times in the last month or so. They are an outstanding side. They press the ball high up the field. They've got great energy. They've got great team spirit. They know exactly exactly what they're trying to do, but they've also got creativity in the front areas. I've seen Southampton play two of the best performances I've seen of any team so far this season, once against Fulham and this game against Hull.
Wow. Well, the standout moment of the match was Adam Lallana's excellent solo goal in the first half, as acknowledged by his teammate and fellow goal scorer at the weekend, Morgan Schneiderlin.
I have the chance to work with him for 6 years now, and I see him growing as a player. He's just fantastic, you know. He got so much ability. I think he's one of the best talent in England, and he deserved that call up on today's show again, you know. He's not hard, because all the eye are focused on you when you get a call up. And today he just showed that he deserved that, you know. He just not his goal. It's our one performance was amazing.
Quite often you see a wonder goal like that scored just before an international call-up, but he's done it after the international call-up and in front of the England manager. Just how good a player is he?
Well, I went to see him play as a young player at an under-17 game when there was Agbonlahor was playing for Aston Villa, Theo Walcott was playing for Southampton, Dyer was playing for Southampton, and there was a player playing behind the main striker called Lallana. And on my notes, I put best player on the pitch. So that's how good I thought he was. And those other players got their chance before him, but Lallana was the creative, he had the vision, he had the intelligence. He's now beginning to show that at the very top.
Good news also for the England manager Roy Hodgson, that he saw Englishman Ricky Lambert scoring a goal and providing two assists. He was also outstanding, and he's now scored every single penalty that he's taken for Southampton. That's 33 out of 33. Mr. Reliable.
He is, but he's also an outstanding player outside the box. You know, I was really surprised when I saw him last year. Balls being played into him, he'd catch him on his chest, he'd bring others into play. He's not blessed with pace, but what he has got is good vision, and he knows where the runners are going. It suits Southampton perfectly. He win balls in the air, you bring others into play, and then they've got those midfield players and wide front players making their runs.
Everyone's singing Southampton praises, rightly so, but after the international break, they have some very testing fixtures coming up. Arsenal away, followed by Chelsea away.
Going to be very difficult, the Arsenal game. I think they can cause Chelsea a problem. I think they might struggle at Arsenal. I think they're going to try and press high up the field, and I think Arsenal might have enough to play around their pressure and cause them problems at the back. But I still think they've put in the best two or three performances I've seen this season, and you've got to give credit to the manager. He's done a magnificent job since he's been in charge.
As for Hull City, this was their third defeat in four matches, but they were all away from the KC Stadium. So why do you think they're doing so well at home? Why struggling so much away?
I think they approach the game totally differently. Steve Bruce at home, he likes his team to press higher up the field. He gets his fullbacks higher up the field. They play without so much fear. Away from home, they start to play with fear. They only play with one up front. They drop people back into midfield. They played three at the back to start with at the weekend. That didn't quite work for them. So I think it's the approach that Steve Bruce has that is causing them a problem away from home.
Well, to Carrow Road next, where Norwich pulled off a superb second-half comeback to secure a priceless 3-1 victory over West Ham, which eased the pressure on their manager, Chris Hughton.
It's a little bit of relief, I must admit. We're on the back of some really tough games. Our performance and the level of performance, it hasn't been that bad, but of course we're on the back of two big defeats to the Manchester club, so it was good, firstly, to come back home here, and of course to play one of the sides that are not one of the top teams. We were certainly able to raise it in that second half, and apart from the goals, I thought we had some other very good chances. Thought we thoroughly deserved it in the end.
He said there was a little bit of relief. I think there might have been a little bit more than that. Their first win in five matches, and the pressure really was on them.
Well, you can tell by his reaction, not just on that clip there, but his reaction after the game, waving to the fans, punching the air. It was a massive game for Norwich, having been beaten and so comprehensively beaten at Manchester City when they didn't defend well all around the field. They looked a lack of effort, you'd have to say at times, a lack of desire. They showed the desire in the second half, and he played two up front and they worked really hard. He played those four in midfield. I'm pleased for Chris Hughton, because I know he's a coach. He goes out there every day and wants to get the best out of his team. He tries to improve the team, and I think he will get better as the season goes on.
And that win was one which they had to come from behind. It was a second half comeback, Hooper, Snodgrass and Fair scoring after that mistake by Jaskalainen, which was absolutely key in that game.
Sometimes you need a bit of luck when things aren't quite going your way. You know, we saw Tottenham at the weekend, when things aren't going their way, they didn't get the luck. Keeper made a great save. This time Norwich get that bit of luck with Jaskalainen making the error for West Ham.
Well, looking at West Ham now, that defeat drops them below Norwich in the table to 16th. Do you think they should be concerned?
I think they should be concerned. I've seen West Ham play on several occasions, even the result against Spurs. It was a one-off. They didn't play particularly well. They played on counter-attack. Spurs had lots of the play and they had that bit of luck at the time. I'm not sure what the game plan is of West Ham. Sometimes they're playing without a striker. They're playing with a midfield player playing at centre-forward. Away from home, they drop far too deep, so they can't then get players in support of the front player. So I would really worry if I was a West Ham supporter. Bridgewater that things aren't quite going right there. And if they don't get it right soon and they don't get Andy Carroll back in the side, that could be a real problem for them.
Do you think that's what is going wrong this season, is that they were building so much on the reliance of Andy Carroll? He gets injured, he hasn't played.
If you put all your eggs in one basket and Andy Carroll is their target man, and that's the way that Sam Allardyce likes to play, there's no question about that. He's a manager that likes direct football. If you're then playing without a centre forward who can win balls in the air and hold up play, you've got a problem. Andy Carroll was their big hope.
Well, another team to record a crucial home victory at the weekend was Aston Villa, who ended a goal drought of 451 minutes in the league to see off Cardiff 2-0 at Villa Park. Defender Leandro Bacuna scored the all-important opening goal with a superb free kick, something which Paul Lambert said came as no real surprise to him.
I thought his one against Manchester City was first class, but that one, I think the ball actually goes by the post and then goes back in. But Leo can do it. He's done it in training numerous times and it's a fabulous goal. You look at the team we've got out there and they've got two young kids for the academy on the bench. This shows you how stretched we are. We've lost a lot of players in this little bit, so the breaks probably came a good time, but I thought we were excellent. I really did.
I'm pleased to say we're joined now by the Dutch under-21 international Leandro Bacuna. Thanks for joining us, Leandro.
Good morning.
Congratulations on that win. It was a wonderful free kick from you that ended Aston Villa's 7.5-hour wait for a goal, and it came in a pretty decent time as well.
Yeah, it was a tough game. Cardiff was playing really compact and we had a difficult game, and on the moment it was like a relief for us, like for me, for the whole team, for the public, so it was just to the right moment.
It was a wonderful free kick, and you scored a similar one as well in the 3-2 win over Manchester City. We have a Twitter question for you from @Luke99. He says, how long did it take you to perfect that free kick?
I think a long time. You need to practice, and if you practice, then in the game it will turn to you, and then you will make goals.
Leandro, Aston Villa don't really play with a lot of width. Do you provide the width down that right-hand side? Is that your job to get forward, get crosses in?
No, I think it's everybody's job. If someone goes through the line and can whip the balls in, then they will do it. I think if you got a chance to whip the ball in, you will do it. It's for everybody like who's coming through on the line, so it's not only me.
Well, that win takes you up to 11th in the league table. How would you assess the start to the season that you've made?
We had a tough beginning of the season, tough games, Man City, some tough games, and I think we did really well, and we just keep going now in the moment and watch game for game, and then we've got to see where we're going to end.
You joined Villa in the summer from Dutch side Groningen for what everyone's saying now is a real bargain fee, less than £1 million reportedly. How would you say you've settled into life in England? Is it fun?
Yeah, it's really good. I really like it in England. Difficult, it's different football than Holland. More speed, more aggressive. It's like it's totally different, and I think it was the right moment for me to come to England, and I'm just doing my job and try to improve my game.
And has your manager, Paul Lambert, are his methods totally different to what you're used to in Holland?
It's not like only the manager, it's like the whole football is different. I think if you compare like English football with Dutch football, a lot of difference, but it's still football, so it doesn't matter. So you just need to go out there and perform and just do the thing you learn to do.
Well, Leandro Bacuna, thanks very much for joining us and good luck against West Brom in your next game.
Okay, thank you.
As for Cardiff, Stuart, that defeat leaves them 2 points above the bottom three in 14th. Now, bearing in mind that they're a newly promoted side, do you think they'd have taken that at the start of the season?
They'd obviously want more points, but I think they would have taken it at the start of the season. I'm still, having seen that, I'm not convinced by what their game plan is. I'm not quite convinced what Malky Mackay is trying to do with the side. I've seen them win games when they've been totally outplayed, and I've seen them lose games when they've actually played quite well. They need more from their front players. They need more from the wide players. I think at times in midfield, their midfield players don't get high enough up the field to go and support the front players. So there's a lot of things that Malky Mackay can work on, but they're doing okay at the moment, but they need to get some results pretty quickly after the break.
Well, next we'll be speaking about Newcastle's resurgence with one of their former entertainers, and we'll be hearing from the man who this weekend had the game of his life.
I'm delighted. I'm over the moon. This is a highlight of my career, yes.
Now it's time for our half-time tweets. Manchester United's Robin van Persie tweeted after the win over former club Arsenal, "The fans were incredible. They really lifted us and were the 12th man. Thanks again to them." Even more pleased about winning at the weekend was the Norwich striker Ricky van Wolfswinkel. "Yes, yes, yes. Great comeback. So happy. Vamos." Chelsea didn't manage to beat West Brom, but a last-minute equaliser was the next best thing, according to defender Cesar Azpilicueta. Keeping the faith until the end is rewarding. Fans are always there. Thank you for your support. Well, speaking of support, after the surprise win over Manchester City, Sunderland fan George Clark tweeted, "That's the best I've seen us play for a long time. We had the confidence to hold on to the ball and play." And finally, you know you're doing well when pop stars tweet about your club. This from Southampton fan and 7 Days singer Craig David. That beautiful moment when your team works their way from League One to being third in the Barclays Premier League. Hashtag respect. Now remember, you can keep up to date with everything that's going on in the Barclays Premier League by following at Barclays Footy with a Y on Twitter. Hashtag you are football. I'm here with Stuart Robson as we continue our look back at the weekend's top flight action. What is South Wales next, Stuart, where on Sunday Swansea and Stoke played out a 6-goal thriller with Charlie Adams' 95th minute penalty rescuing a point for the Potters. Manager Mark Hughes admitted afterwards they got lucky with that late equaliser.
Given our history, recent times we don't usually get them. So, listen, we take the break. There was contact. I think Stephen tried to flick the ball. Arnie's right close to the goal, and who's to say that if the lad hadn't gone in the way, it would have gone in anyway. So I can understand Swansea being a little bit aggrieved. We've had situations like that ourselves.
He admits there was contact with Routledge's arm, but contact isn't the key here. Should that have been a penalty?
In my view, no. I didn't even see the incident when it first happened, and it was only on the replays that you see it hit Routledge's arm, but I certainly wouldn't give a penalty for that.
Well, Stoke started well. They went 2-0 up. Stephen Ireland's goal in particular was a wonderful passing move, and that really is significant of this new style under Mark Hughes.
Yes, he's playing with a new style. They pass the ball quite well. The problem they've had in previous games that I've seen, that they haven't had enough penetration in the top third of the field. They haven't been able to break down the opposition. It's been passing for the sake of passing. Against Swansea, that wasn't the case. I mean, it was a brilliant move. Peter Crouch involved with it. And when the ball does come to Stephen Ireland, as he did for Manchester City so many years ago, making the right run at the right time, and what a good finish.
What about the mental strength of Swansea that they showed coming back from 2-0 down to lead 3-2, almost to win the game, having played in Europe in the week?
They've got great belief in their manager. They've got great belief in their style of play. They know that they can break down the opposition if they get control of midfield. They play some wonderful football out in wide areas. And when Boney's playing, when crosses come into the box, he does look a threat.
To White Hart Lane next, where Newcastle left with all 3 points, thanks largely to their goalkeeper, Tim Krul, who made a string of fine saves to keep the Spurs' attack at bay.
I'm delighted. I'm over the moon. It was nice to celebrate with the back four and grab each other and say, it doesn't happen very often, these kind of games. And 3 points away at Tottenham is a fantastic result. I think we've played better against Sunderland. We played really well and we lost. And today we didn't play quite so well and we duck it out. So as long as we keep grafting and clean sheets, we've got Remy up front, who just keeps scoring, and we say that, keep a clean sheet and we will win. We've got a lot of goals in our team.
To discuss Newcastle's 1-0 win in more detail now, we're joined by a man who played almost 200 times in the Barclays Premier League for the club, as the former Magpies defender, John Beresford. Thanks for joining us, John.
My pleasure.
Well, it was a wonderful result for Newcastle. Did you predict that one?
No, I didn't. And I was also at the home game against Chelsea, which I do all the home games, and I didn't predict that one either. Mike Coopan was absolutely blitzed. They've been inconsistent this season. And then, as I said, I looked at the games coming up, and I thought Chelsea at home, Tottenham away, you know, a couple of points, and I thought, yeah, I'd have took it. But for him to get maximum is phenomenal.
Loic Remy has made quite an impact since arriving on loan from QPR. That was his 7th goal in his last 7 Barclays Premier League matches. Are you surprised by how much of an impact he's made?
I am a little bit. I mean, I think after watching him a couple of games, you could see his movement, his ability, and it shone out. He's one of these people who you need to play on the shoulder. And I think what's happened is, I think the players are now trusting in him. The problem with that, what's happened is that Cisse has been moved out because he's the better player. And I think if you give him the chances, he'll get you the goals. But as I said before, the problem what's been happening this season, they've put some decent performances and then they've been awful. Sometimes you just didn't know which Newcastle team was going to turn up. I mean, I only watched the highlights against Spurs, but what was nice to see, I know we all talk about flair and, you know, it's all about, you know, scoring goals, but I'll have to admit, sometimes, you know, it's nice to see a performance when, you know, a lot of the back four who've took a lot of stick and they get the pats on the back, you know, and it's great to see that. I mean, I know Tim got the, he gets the man of the match, so to speak, but he knows as a back four and him as a fifth man, it's all about working as a unit, and it's great when it all comes together.
And what about the goalkeeper, Tim Krul? It was a magnificent display from him. He obviously kept the Newcastle in that lead. Have you seen a better performance from a goalkeeper for quite some while?
No, it's sometimes it's one of those days, you know, the opposition, you know, we've played in them games where you just think it's not going to be our day today just because of somebody's brilliance of your sort of inconsistency. But, I mean, Tim, not last season he was okay. The previous season he was magnificent. He saved everything when Newcastle came fifth. Last season he did okay, you know, he is a quality keeper. But you can see it again, he's growing in stature. He's getting better and better. The problem, what's going to happen is which there was talk of it last season, but now we're talking about him again. You know the conversation that people have been having about Hart, how important goalkeepers are. The big boys will come knocking. You'll get to a period of January, and it wouldn't surprise me if somebody comes in for him.
In January even? Well, Tim Krul in that game made 14 saves. That's the most by any Barclays Premier League goalkeeper since Opta started recording those stats 6 years ago. But looking at the rest of the team, John, the French stars are now starting to settle in a little bit more, as well as Remy. You've got Kabay, who's been outstanding recently, Gouffran also, and Mathieu Debuchy. How do you think those French players have taken time to settle in?
That is a problem, you know, with the foreign players. I think the biggest thing of all, which it's taken a lot longer than I expected, is them understanding the way the fans at Newcastle want to play. The foreign lads, the French team, the game that they're usually playing is a lot slower. They like to build up from the back. The trouble at St. James's Park is the jury's faithful, and I've been lucky enough to play in front of them. They prefer the tempo a little bit higher. They want to see shots and to see excitement. And sometimes they get a little bit frustrated, and you can hear a little bit of murmurings within the team if things aren't going too well and they're trying to build it up slow. And it's a bit of a catch-22, you know. I can understand what the players are wanting to do. The fans aren't that patient. But if they get an early goal, it makes it a lot easier because then the fans settle down. But that's the problem, I think, sometimes. I think with Remy, he suits that. He wants to get the ball in behind. He wants to sort of, like, you know, get on the end of things. So he does quicken things up because he makes a lot more runs. So I think now, as I said, the team is coming together. But I think also, so from that point of view, I think that the manager's also realising as well, because I think he's setting them up a little bit more attack-minded, you know, because of the back four. When Colaccini's been out, he's probably protected the back two a little bit more because he hasn't got the trust of Colaccini organising. He's just getting the balance right. But yeah, the things are going great now for Newcastle. I know, and I think the joys know, we're not going to finish in the top four, but you've got to get in that next sort of Europa League. That's where Newcastle should be competing.
When I saw Newcastle at the beginning of the season, without Ben Arthur, I couldn't see where they were going to score goals. How does Pardew fit him into the team, Ben Arthur?
It's difficult. From the way Pardew sets up, he's very organised. You understand, you know, when they haven't got the ball, how he wants to set up. The problem when you're playing Ben Arthur is he's not too interested when we've got the ball. We've all played with players like that. But also, I always say, you know, once you do get the ball, and if you let him go, he can be a world beater. They kind of want to play him sort of on the right. The trouble is when he's playing on the right, because he waits so long to get the ball sometimes, he feels as though, well, I've been waiting long enough, right, I'm just going to do it on my own. And then if it doesn't come off for him that day, he usually, you know, he's the first number that's going to pop out to be subbed. And so there's a bit of frustration there. Again, I think if the team's playing with confidence and they're winning, I would always have Ben Arthur in my side. It's because of what you said. He's a person, other than Remy, he's the one who will get you a goal and he'll get you the 3 points.
And just finally, a very quick one for you, John. You're one of the more recognisable Barclays Premier League players. Well, you were back in the 1990s, probably because of your various hairdos. But before you played professionally, did you have to clean boots when you were an apprentice? Whose boots were they? Did you mind doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. I had to clean boots. And it does my head in that these apprentices now, or YTSs, don't do it. Going back to my first, I did Kevin Bonds, Neil McNabb. I was at Man City. I remember as a pro, when I first got my pro contract and I got my first boot boy, how proud and pleased I was that I could just throw my boot for the young lad. And I just think it's a trait that should be carried on.
OK. John Beresford, thanks so much. Well, as for Spurs, it was their second home defeat in 3 league matches and it drops them down to 7th in the table. They're struggling to score, particularly at home. Why do you think that is? Just 9 goals in 11 league matches.
First of all, I think they play too slow a tempo, and that's what the crowd have been upset about. Dembele's a good midfield player, but he takes too many touches and they don't get enough players in support of Soldado. The wide players often play too wide. The second centre-forward, it was Eriksen against Newcastle, quite often comes deep to get the ball. So when Soldado's not a player that's going to get the ball, twist and turn and go and score goals by himself. So he needs players to link up with. He's good when players are passing from 10, 15 yards away, and they did it in the second half. Sandro came on, they got Paulinho higher up the field, and suddenly they played played at a higher tempo.
The Spurs have only scored 9 league goals this season, yet they've fired 73 shots on target. That's more than any other team in the Barclays Premier League. So how do you equate those two stats?
Well, I think it's been a couple of games where they have been really unlucky with their finishes. Against Newcastle at the weekend, in the second half, they created numerous opportunities. It was only because Tim Krul played well that Newcastle got their win. And I saw them play against Cardiff, where it was a magnificent performance by Spurs. They had 20-odd shots, but they still didn't. They only scored late on. So I think there's a combination of poor finishing. There's been a combination of the crosses haven't quite been good enough. And there's also they don't get enough players into the forward areas and they play too slowly through midfield. If they can rectify one or two of those problems, I think Spurs can still challenge to get in the top four.
Elsewhere on Sunday, Manchester City also suffered a surprise defeat at the hands of a North West side, going down 1-0 at relegation-threatened Sunderland. So that was the best attack in the league, losing to the worst defence. How do you explain that then? Nice easy one.
Well, once again, I always see when Manchester City play well, they play at a high tempo. They pass the ball forward and then they make forward runs. Against Sunderland, I think they went out onto the field being quite complacent. They passed it slowly. They wanted to control the game. But you can't just pass for the sake of passing. You have to pass with penetration. And it was easy for Sunderland to get into good shape and defend quite well, keep their team shape, and they were well organised. And they counter-attacked quickly in the first half, and that caused Manchester City problems, obviously, for the goal.
That's the fourth Barclays Premier League season in a row that Sunderland have beaten Manchester City 1-0 at home. Let's hear from the match winner, Phil Bardsley, who was asked what this result will do for the rest of Sunderland's season.
Massive, you know. Massive team like Manchester City coming here and us getting a result like that, you know. We've got to take it on from here now. We've got two massive games away at Stoke and Aston Villa and, you know, we've got to go there and show the same commitment and desire we did tonight. And, you know, as much as that as passing the ball when we do have it, and you can see the way we've been moving the ball in a different way. And, you know, I say you can see the lads are enjoying it as well, and fair play to them.
Bill Bardsley says, commitment, desire, passing the ball, the lads are enjoying it. Does that just sum up what was wrong under Di Canio?
Yes, and it sums up what's right about Gus Poyet, because we know that Gus Poyet's teams, he likes to pass the ball, but he's also got, at the moment, a good defensive organisation. And I think that Wes Brown coming back into the side, you know, you'd think after 22 months he'd look a little bit rusty, but he played brilliantly. He intercepted so many balls that were played into feet. He also anticipated the balls being played over the top, and his understanding with O'Shea, particularly in the second half, was really good. And it was good to see Wes Brown back at his very best.
And Sunderland, the last team to finally keep a clean sheet in the Barclays Premier League. Well, as for Manchester City, that was their fourth away defeat of the season. But manager Manuel Pellegrini says he'll not change his playing philosophy.
I think we had several chances at least to draw or to win, but we couldn't do it. If I think what will I change, I think that nothing. I think we are really playing well, but points says that we just won 4 points away, and that is not many points.
Pellegrini saying he won't change anything away from home despite those four defeats. So that indicates that he thinks there's nothing too much wrong, is there?
I think there is. I saw them in pre-season. I saw them in a game against Arsenal where they didn't defend well at all. They played too high a line. It was too easy for Arsenal to get in behind them. I also saw them murder AC Milan in a pre-season friendly where they were 4 or 5 nil up, ended up being 5-4 because they didn't know how to defend. And you don't win the Barclays Premier League unless you have a good defensive base. Yes, you've got to go and score goals. You've got to get the balance right between the attacking side of the game and the defensive side of the game. At the moment, Pellegrini hasn't got that right.
How they miss company. Well, to Anfield on Saturday, Liverpool moved up to second with an emphatic 4-0 victory over Fulham to pile yet more pressure on their manager, Martin Yol. Luis Suarez with another couple of goals. That's now 7 in his last 4 Barclays Premier League games at Anfield. Does that make them genuine title contenders, do you feel?
At the moment, yes, because they're the second best team in the league. And when you watch them play, they play with great fluidity. The front two combine brilliantly together. I like the system of playing with 3 at the back and 3 in midfield and 2 up front. It all depends on who the wing-backs are, whether it's successful. But I think at the moment, Liverpool look a very good side. And I like the way Brendan Rodgers goes about his task.
Well, let's hear from another of Liverpool's goal scorers, defender Martin Skrtel, who was pleased with how they bounced back after losing at Arsenal last weekend.
That was the key for the game today, you know, because we lost the last game, so we wanted to send a message. We are here and we are ready to fight. So I'm happy we could get 3 points today.
We'll talk about Fulham's weaknesses in a moment, but it was a very different match, of course, to the one at Arsenal. What do you think went wrong for Liverpool specifically in that game?
At Arsenal, I didn't think they had so much of a problem as just that when they conceded the first goal. I thought against Arsenal, Liverpool played well. I thought the system suited them. I did the game and I was commentating and saying Liverpool are dominating possession at times. They know how to get it out to their wing-backs. The problem they had is that without having Johnson out at right wing-back and without having Enrique out at left wing-back, the wide players didn't get the crosses and they didn't cause Arsenal problems. And then he went to almost like a 4-4-2 and that didn't work for him either. So I think he's got to stick with the system. I think they've got great players in front areas. They need more from Lucas. I still think Lucas is lacking that athleticism to be the good holding midfield player. But if the back three can get a good relationship, I still believe Liverpool are a very, very good side.
Well, Liverpool's total of 32 shots in that Fulham match is the most recorded by a team in a Barclays Premier League game this season. Now on to Fulham. It was their fourth defeat in five games and drops them into the relegation zone. And manager Martin Jol knows things need to improve and quickly.
They scored two goals from set pieces and that is what you shouldn't do against a team like Liverpool. And after that, of course, we had a big hill to climb. And no, I would like to have a result. And of course, you would have liked to play against other teams, you know, and that is what we did when we played against Stoke or Crystal Palace or Sunderland away. They are probably the same as us and you need these wins and we did that, but we couldn't get a good result against the top sides.
That defeat wasn't just about conceding from set pieces, was it? There was a lot more wrong with Fulham in that match.
I'm afraid I saw them against Southampton a couple of weeks earlier, which was the worst Barclays Premier League performance I've seen for quite some while. They didn't show enough effort, they didn't show enough organisation, they didn't show any resilience, and that was exactly the same against Liverpool. And if you perform like that over a couple of weeks, you've got real problems.
Talking of problems, Berbatov, wonderful player on his day. Does he have his day often enough?
When they're at home and when they're controlling the game, he's a wonderful player. He'll bring balls down on his chest, he'll link up with other players. But when you're away from home and you need your... Because defending starts from the front. And if you don't defend from the front, your midfield players then are going to be overstretched. And when you look at Parker at the moment, looks a shadow of the player that was playing for Spurs a little while ago. You look at Sidwell, he can't get around the pitch because he's been played around far too easily. With no Hangeland in the back four, that's always a problem because I've seen Senderos play a lot. And he's got attributes, but he doesn't read danger when balls are played in behind him. So Fulham, all around the field are being outplayed and they've got to sort it out quickly.
Quickly for Martin Jol's sake. Well, rounding off this week's fixtures, we go to Selhurst Park, where Crystal Palace ended a run of seven consecutive league defeats, drawing 0-0 with high-flying Everton. And we can hear from Palace's interim manager, Keith Millen, who thinks his side can build on this result.
The good thing is we're creating chances, and if we weren't creating chances, there'd be more of a concern. I do believe there's goals in this squad. I think there's enough quality to deliver balls into the box, and we just got to keep working and get that belief that we're going to score at the end of it. It's nice to come in here with a smile on my face, having actually achieved some points from the game. And if we're being greedy, when you look at the clear-cut chances, we should have won the game.
Keith Millen says he had a smile on his face. He would have had a much bigger one had Jerome Thomas put that clear-cut opportunity away.
What a good run it was from Jerome Thomas, breaking the offside line. Why he went to chip the goalkeeper, I'm not quite sure. It was a risky sort of a finish for him, but... You saw that Crystal Palace were working hard. They're working much harder for Keith Millen than they were previously, but they didn't have too much possession to really create too many opportunities against Everton.
Well, Palace chairman Steve Parrish appointed Ian Moody as sporting director before the game and said that they'll appoint a new manager within the week. What sort of character do you think they'll go for?
They've got to go for an actual coach. They've got to go for someone who's going to go out on the training field and work with the players tirelessly to make sure he gets his ideas across. They have a game plan. They know exactly what they're trying to do. Because if you haven't got the best players, and there's no doubt about it, Crystal Palace haven't got as good a players as some of the other teams in the Barclays Premier League. So you have to be better organised, you have to have a game plan that will cause the opposition problems, and you have to be focused week in, week out on what you're trying to do. So that's why I think they need a coach rather than just a man manager who's going to come in and give them that little lift for 2 or 3 weeks.
Well then, give us a name.
I can't give you a name just off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's plenty that will be in for the job.
I bet there are. Well, as for Everton, this was their second goalless draw in a row, and it sees them slip to sixth place. They had almost three quarters of the possession of the match, but worryingly, they didn't create a great deal.
Yeah, I've seen Martinez, his side's play at Wigan, where on occasions they look as they can open up the opposition with crisp passing, forward movement, doing things at a high tempo. I've also seen his Wigan side play too slowly, and that's exactly what Everton did against Crystal Palace. Lots of possession, but sometimes passing for the sake of passing, keeping the ball, keeping possession, but there has to be that penetration, there has to be that forward movement. You have to have your centre forward running in between defenders, you have to have midfield players running beyond your centre forward at times, and that didn't happen enough against Crystal Palace, and that's why they didn't score a goal.
Well, that's just about about it for this week. There are no Barclays Premier League matches this weekend because of international fixtures. So before we go, Stuart, what would you say has been the highlight of your weekend, footballing-wise?
The highlight of my weekend was definitely Tim Krul's performance. It was outstanding. I was right behind one or two of the saves that he made when he didn't look as though he had any chance of getting there. So that's my highlight of the weekend.
Okay, well, why don't you tweet us your highlights to @BarclaysFooty with a Y. We're looking at the Barclays Premier League table. Arsenal still on top, but just a 2-point gap from second place Liverpool. And then there are just 4 points separating second place and eighth place Manchester City. Now, looking at the bottom three, Fulham have slipped in there after that heavy defeat at Liverpool. Sunderland, second bottom, and Crystal Palace, 6 points from safety, but also with a far inferior goal difference to Stoke City. So, Stuart, will your old club Arsenal still be top at Christmas, you reckon?
Yes, I think they will, because I don't think the other sides have been consistent enough. I think Arsenal are playing some good football. And even though they lost at Manchester United, I still think they came out of that game full of confidence, because I think in the second half they outplayed Manchester United, and I think they will be top come Christmas.
Well, thanks very much for your company, Stuart. And before we go, don't forget to have a try at this week's trivia teaser against Newcastle on Sunday. Spurs goalkeeper Brad Friedel became one of only 4 players over the age of 42 to have played in a Barclays Premier League match. Can you name the other 3? If you think you know the answer, tweet it to @BarclaysFooty with a Y, or post it on the Barclays Football Facebook page, and we'll reveal the answer on the site later in the week. There are, of course, no Barclays Premier League fixtures this weekend due to the international break, but we'll still be back next week for a special show where we'll be reviewing what's been a highly unpredictable first quarter of the season. But until then, from Stuart Robson and me, Jackie Oatley, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the official podcast of the Barclays Premier League, brought to you by Barclays.